Hello and welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people who are known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community. I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Kathy Silber. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry kicks off the show with excerpts from remarks at Planned Parenthood's rally for abortion rights on May 3rd. Then Catherine Bruno, Chief Experience Officer of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, joins us live to talk about the Supreme Court's threat to abortion rights and the nationwide rallies on Saturday to preserve reproductive freedom. Later, our reporting on abortion access continues in a live conversation with Judy Waterman, who desperately tried but failed to get an abortion in 1972, mere months before the landmark Roe v. Wade decision. After that, Bria Barthel alerts us to a fantastic plant sale at the Landis Arboretum this weekend. And finally, for our weekly segment, Checking In with Community Groups, we're joined live by Bob Blackman, president of the Justice Center of Rensselaer County. But first, here are the headlines.
State lawmakers are expected to pass the Clean Slate Act before session ends June 2nd. That would seal New Yorkers' criminal records 3 years after sentencing for a misdemeanor offense and 7 years for a felony. About 2.3 million New Yorkers would have their criminal records sealed if the bill is signed into law. Past criminal records often hinder formerly incarcerated people from entering the workforce, furthering their education, or securing housing.
As the country struggles with a worsening shortage of baby formula, infants and children with special needs in rural areas and low-income neighborhoods are at a greater risk of not being fed than more affluent ones. The combination of product recalls, rising prices, and supply chain issues has particularly affected the availability of formula distributed through the WIC program for poor families.
The state Senate passed legislation this week that would ban the retail sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits in pet stores. The bill is moving as well in the state assembly. The bill sponsor says that with so many animals in need of rescue, there's no need for puppy mills that abuse animals to supply pet stores. Animals raised in such mills often are sick and require expensive treatment.
The Gazette reports that Schenectady County will get 2 rest stops in Rotterdam along the Mohawk-Hudson bike trail, and the town of Saratoga will make Hudson River boat launch updates after receiving funding from the Canal Corporation.
After Senate Democrats failed on Wednesday to approve a broad abortion rights bill due to the opposition of Senator Manchin, Republican Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are still working to convince Democrats to pass their proposals for a narrower bill protecting the right to abortion. And that's it for the headlines. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Like what you hear, you can find these stories and more at mediasanctuary.org.
And to learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390.
On May 3rd, Planned Parenthood held a rally for abortion rights at West Capitol Park in Albany. Roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry attended and brings us these highlights with remarks from Carly Hasty, Speaker of the New York State Assembly, and Luz Cookie Benbow for Troy for Black Lives.
Champion Speaker of the New York State Assembly, Carl Hasty.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is a gathering that should not have to happen. This is a rally that should not have to happen. And when we went inside earlier for the bipartisan women's legislative pro-choice caucus, we have so many caucuses here now, I reminded when I spoke, and I'm gonna give a big shout out to our great chair of the Higher Education Committee, Deborah Glick, who when she debated the Reproductive Health Act in 2019, A lot of our Republican colleagues said to her, this isn't necessary. But it was necessary. And we have to understand that this was coordinated. And I'm going to continue to remind people, this is why elections matter. From them denying Barack Obama the ability to fill that spot on the Supreme Court, this was planned. When many of the Supreme Court justices, they said, this has already been litigated. They had a plan. And now we find out that this leak, and the chief judge acknowledged the leak, and here we are. Who the hell does the Supreme Court think they are to tell women what to do with their bodies? You know, I'm one that, you know, I've been in this business a long time, and in politics and in life, you get setbacks, you have negative things happen. But sometimes I think things happen for a reason. And I think the reason for us is, I think sometimes in life, we get complacent, we forget that we have to continue to fight, we forget that there's always going to be a struggle. And for those of us, sometimes we move on to the next thing, but we can't forget about those things that we fought for before, because there's always people looking to undo the things that we fought for. So I just want to say to all of you, this isn't a day to be sad. This is a day to be recharged, re-energized, and rededicated to making sure that women in this country are respected and not told what to do with your bodies.
Thank you, Speaker, and thank you to our great leadership across the state for being here to not only say what they are going to do, but to put in the hard work to make sure that New York doesn't just stop with the passage of the RHA, with the protections that we have here, but that we continue to build and make sure that New York is a beacon. It is my pleasure to bring to the microphone Moose Marquez Benha, local activist. Thank you so much. Ban off my bodies! A little bit, because during Freedom Summer, as a matter of fact, I'm gonna go back to 2014 in Ferguson, when we said Black Lives Matter, this is what we mean. When we say your lives don't matter to Black Lives Matter, this is what we're telling you. They're coming for us now, but they're coming for you next. We have got
going towards pro-life, and yet
city. So we're gonna complicate this. We can't just solely talk about abortion rights and not think that trans people who need gender-affirming support are not getting health care. We need to step up for people with disabilities so that we don't deem them all asexual and shut them out. Come on, y'all. 2 weeks ago, in Cleveland Park, New York, at a Target store, a young black man, 15 years old, he was a boy, a young black boy who was autistic, was beat up by Cleveland Park and San Antonio sheriffs. And no one cried. No one cried. What does this have to do with reproductive rights? Everything.
That report by roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry is from the May 3rd rally for abortion rights. Our next segment covers the upcoming rallies on the same issue.
This Saturday, the nation will take to the streets to protest for abortion rights after Politico obtained a leaked draft that the Supreme Court has voted to strike down Roe versus Wade. The 1973 decision that found that access to abortion is a constitutional right. Joining us now to talk about this is Catherine S. Bruno, Chief Experience Officer at the Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Planned Parenthood is a reproductive health care provider. There are many reasons why a person would seek an abortion. What would it mean if clinics could no longer offer the access to abortion?
If people lose access to abortion, then they lose the fundamental rights to make decisions about their own bodies and their own futures. And then they're really no longer considered full equal members of society. So it's incredibly important that we remember that this is a long established issue. For 50 years we've had this right. And now to think about a future generations not having the same access to abortion that, you know, people had before, it's devastating. It's devastating for every one of us in the movement.
And we just heard coverage from last week's rally in which Luz Marquez-Bembo spoke about the intersectionality of abortion access. What would you say to that? Or do you have any extra information around that?
She was incredibly powerful. I was lucky enough to be there when she was giving that speech. And it's true, all of these issues are intersectional. I mean, when it comes to controlling your right to your body autonomy, as well as safe drinking water and being able to raise your kids in a place where they're not going to be shot in the street or shot in school or be able to just grow up healthy and live, you know, healthy, productive lives is incredibly important for all of us.
The Roe versus Wade made a statement that the right to abortion is a constitutional right. How would you argue or would you argue that this right is constitutional and a human right?
I mean, I absolutely think that it is. I think you must have the freedom and the power to control your own body. And doing so, that means no judge or politician or ban should ever be able to block you from making personal medical decisions that could change the entire course of your life. And I don't think abortion access should depend on where you live or how much money you have. I mean, I think one of the parts about Roe being overturned is that, you know, some states will have access and some states won't. And so it really becomes around an issue of how much money you have. If you live in one of those states that bans abortion, you can get on a plane, you can drive for hours, you can take, you know, days off of work, you're still going to have access to abortion. But people who live in poverty or who can't take time off of work or do not have the money or the means, those are the people who are going to be disproportionately affected. And of course, those people are usually people who live in poverty, Black, Latino, Indigenous women, people who don't otherwise have the opportunities. And that's just what makes it so completely unfair.
And New York State has parameters in place that would still allow access to abortion, but it still would affect New York. Could you talk about why that would be and in which ways it would affect New York?
Sure. And we've been thinking a lot about this, you know, since we have been preparing for years since the makeup of the Supreme Court has changed. In 2019, New York passed the Reproductive Health Act, and that codified Roe's law into New York state law, which was a huge moment for us and obviously incredibly important now looking down the barrel of what we're about to see come at the end of June. And so New York can become a safe haven for those seeking abortion. But by that being said, it'll increase the demand for all of the providers in the state. So folks who would be kind of coming from Western New York, let's say Ohio is one of those states that bans abortion. A lot of those folks will then cross over into New York State, you know, Western New York. And so folks who live out there will then not have as many access to appointments because there's only so many providers and there's only so many appointments, and abortion is a time sensitive procedure. So you have to get it when you're, you know, you need to do so. So some of those folks will be pushing, you know, towards us. And then we feel the same thing will probably happen out of New York City. So a lot of folks will travel to New York City. I think when people think they're going to travel, they're not really going to come to the capital region, maybe say from Texas. But if you can't get an appointment downstate, you'll come upstate. You'll drive 2 or 3 hours because you'll need to do so. So I think we're all expecting in the state to see an incredible increase in demand. But there is, you know, fear around having enough providers nationwide and in our community as well.
This issue has been very polarizing, and I wonder, what are some of the big misunderstandings that you hear about abortion access?
I think one of the things I definitely want to say to the people listening in our community, no matter whether Roe is overturned or not, in New York State, as you said before, it's still legal and safe. And at our three health centers that we operate in the Hudson and Mid-Hudson Valley region is Albany, Hudson, and Troy. We have a center in each. All three provide abortion. All three are open, serving patients every single day. And that's not going to change. So I think that's really important. I think people hear overturn Roe, and that means it's going to be, you know, outlawed everywhere. And that's really not the case. We've had a lot of patients calling and being very confused. So I think it is important to let people know that. I think people are scared. I think they're really scared about what's going to happen.
Included in the people who sometimes seek abortion are people who are family planning, who don't want to get an abortion, who under certain circumstances need the access to it. And do you have, I just want to talk a little bit about like the range of people who do seek abortions and that it not always being what it may be so shallowly portrayed as miscare for safety, or that's not the word I'm looking for, but could we talk a little bit about the span of who seeks abortion and some of those scenarios that are underrepresented?
I mean, I think a lot of people talk about, you know, young people who were not careful and found themselves pregnant and they're going to seek abortion. You hear lots of people, I think you get a lot of pushback. You shouldn't use abortion as birth control. There's a whole lot of scenarios that happen. I think one of the most important pieces that I like to think about as someone who does this work often talks a lot about abortion is there really is no, like what they say, a good abortion or a bad abortion. I think I like to say every safe abortion is a good abortion. I think any reason that somebody comes to in their life to have an abortion is a good reason because it's their reason. And that's the reason that brought them to us. But there are a lot of extenuating circumstances. I think a lot of the people are very upset around having no rape or incest exceptions in some of these laws. In some of these states, they're not allowing for any of that. And I think that's got people very upset who maybe aren't as, you know, they're pro-choice in certain circumstances, and you hear that a lot, like, I'm only pro-choice for this reason or that reason. And, you know, it's fine however people determine it for themselves. But those two things really do stand out for people, that there's no exception for rape or incest. And I think that's really difficult for people to process. And there are medical reasons where someone would be needing an abortion to save the life of the mother, or, you know, the pregnancy cannot be carried to full term. And there are lots of reasons that people make these decisions, and they really should be made with their doctor and not with a politician who has absolutely no bearing on why they should continue a pregnancy or not.
So in reaction to this leaked document, this Saturday, May 14th, the nation will take to the streets to demonstrate the right to abortion access. What's in store for Saturday?
Well, we're really excited to participate in the Day of Protest and Defiance, is what they're calling it. We're having three, what we call, they're called honking waves. They're events where people can come out and stand signs and do some chanting and really kind of gather together with people who are kind of feeling the same way that they are, angry and upset and wanting to really see that kind of support in the streets. We're doing it at all three of the centers. Albany at 5 o'clock on Central Avenue. There's going to be one at Troy at 1 o'clock on Hoosick Street, and there'll be one at 1 o'clock at 804 Columbia Avenue in Hudson.
Great. What is the best way to participate in these rallies?
We'd love you to show up. You can bring your own signs. We're going to have lots of swag there if you don't have a sign, and you're just going to come and just get to stand in solidarity with people who agree with you and about how wrong this is, that's what's coming.
What about for listeners who aren't sure and are still trying to figure out exactly where they stand? Will there be people to answer questions, and will there be any speakers at these events?
We're not going to do speakers. We just, the one that you were playing, that event just from a couple of days ago. We've had two events. We had one yesterday as well, doing some speeches. And so we just decided to keep them a little bit more kind of low key. People can come communicate with other people. I know our CEO will be there as well, answering questions at two of the sites, and I'll be at the other one. So if anyone has any questions, you can always reach out to someone on the Planned Parenthood staff. They're happy to talk to anybody.
And where's the best way to get more information on all the rallies and how to stay involved?
For local, it's at our website, uhpp.org, for that's Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. We also keep our Facebook page very updated, so you can find us on Facebook. You can get any information there. And feel free to reach out to us at any time.
Is banoff.org also
banoff? Yep, that's the national information. You go there and they'll point you to any local event that you're looking for. You put your zip code in and they'll show you where the rallies are.
Great. Well, thank you, Catherine Bruno of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, for joining us. And thank you. And for listeners, stay tuned after the break for an interview with someone who was unexpectedly pregnant in 1972 and unable to get an abortion.
For those just tuning in, my co-host tonight and the conductor of that interview is Sina Bizila Hickey, and I'm Kathy Silber. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany, WOOGLP 92.7 FM Troy, and WCAALP 107.3 FM Albany. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community. This program covers stories of social and environmental justice produced by the community, for the community, and is supported by independent donations. To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. And for our next segment, Judy Waterman is one of countless American women whose plans and dreams were hijacked by an unplanned pregnancy and no way to get an abortion. In Judy's case, just months before the January 1973 Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade. Judy joins us now live to reflect upon that time and the very real threats to women's freedom and equality posed by the likely Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe. Judy, hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad you're there. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
That's very polite of you. Listen, we should share with our listeners that you and I have been friends for over 40 years now, if you can believe that. And over
You're
the years,
very old now.
Well, yes, we all are. It happens annually, moment by moment, to tell the truth. And you know, you and I have talked over the years, and again, just the other day, about your unplanned pregnancy in 1972, right before Roe became the law of the land. What strikes me as we get older is that more and more people all the time are too young to have any inkling of what it was like back then. And that makes stories like yours more important than ever. So first of all, before we get into your story, I wonder if you remember where you were and what you were doing when you first heard the news about that leaked Supreme Court decision.
Well, I was watching news as always, and I was just so, I mean, I expected it. I mean, from everything we had heard, I expected it. But I still was so sad, deeply saddened. I mean, I was angry to the point of tears.
Yeah. So did it bring back, I mean, your whole experience, of course, is right with you in your bones at all times. Can you tell us about what was going on in 1972?
Well, I will tell you that actually it happened a little bit earlier. It was 1969 because I had finished college. I had moved to D.C. for a while, and my boyfriend, who was actually a friend from high school, we really spent no time together at all. We contacted each other through letters and kept in touch that way, and he had gone to Vietnam, and he came back, and we got together, and we decided that we were going to break up, that it probably, you know, we probably were best just, you know, it was best for us just to be good friends. And of course, I came back here and got ready to start graduate school, got an apartment, you know, was ready to go and, you know, waiting for my period. And it didn't happen. So my father was in touch with a pharmacist, was a good friend of his. And so he tried to get me something that I could maybe, you know, hop in a hot tub and take this, and it was supposed to maybe, you know, help abort the baby, but that also didn't happen. So, you know, I ended up getting married.
Wow.
You know, who knows, you know, what I would have done had that not happened, although I can't say that I don't love all of my children. But,
Of course. Let me ask you this, though. So when you decided to break up, was that because you had plans to go to graduate school?
I think it was because we had seen very little of each other in person. I had known him in high school. We had just kept in touch. No, I just think that we just felt like we just weren't clicking that way. I mean, obviously we slept together.
Right.
You know, but, you know, it was a mutual thing. We just, you know, didn't feel like we wanted to carry on the relationship in any type of a physical way.
Right. So it wasn't sort of like, oh, I'm going to do this and therefore being involved with you doesn't fit, because presumably you could have continued a long distance relationship with him. So was this over a period of months of a certain amount of desperation as the pregnancy is growing in you and you're trying to find, was there any thought of abortion or was this?
Of course. But at that time there was only, I believe that abortions were legal in New York at that time, but I didn't have the finances to go to New York. And when I told him about it, he said, let's get married. And so, you know, that was not on my agenda, but that's what we did. I think I'm probably not the only person in that position.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think people who weren't around then, and that includes me. I was probably too young to fully notice it. But people who didn't experience those times, I don't know that they can fully appreciate the weight of social norms in those days. Oh. Just how much second wave feminism has profoundly changed things. But this was even before second wave really hit, or just at the beginning of second wave feminism, and just how patronizing and infantilizing and shaming how much women and girls experienced that as the daily air they breathed. It wasn't just abortion either, but the explicit and intentional control of women by their fathers, by their husbands, by society. Can you paint more of a picture of for us, for people who don't have a sense of that?
Well, okay, so I started college in 1964. So I had kind of grown up during the 50s, and it was such a puritanical period. Okay, like the show I Love Lucy, Desi and Lucy cannot sleep in the same bed. They have to sleep in twin beds. You know, right. So, you know, even what we saw, you know, on TV or, you know, in society and stuff, there was no Dr. Ruth. There was nothing like that. When I got to college, I learned that there was no birth control except for married women. Unmarried women could not have birth control because, of course, they're supposed to save themselves for marriage. Chastity was supposed to be the word of the day. Now, I went to an art institute and, you know, we were kind of a wild bunch there. So, you know, chastity was like probably not working out too well. at the same time, this whole cultural shift happens. The Vietnam War starts to ramp up. Timothy Leary is telling us all to tune in, turn on, and drop out. 1967 was like the summer of love and hate Ashbury. So, you know, all of this, everything was just changing. And, you know, people were, you know, every month or so, somebody else would have to leave school because they got pregnant. Now, eventually, there was I'm not sure how this happened, Kathy, but a woman contacted me who was from my hometown. She was an acquaintance, not a friend. But either she had tracked down or somebody had told her about an abortion provider in the city where I lived. So she came to town and I took her to get an abortion. And it was not in a back alley. It was in a motel suite. And so I stayed with her and then stayed with her afterwards during kind of her recovery period. And then she left. But, you know, I learned about her like years later. And she had married somebody that my family knew and she did not have any children. And it often made me sad to think that perhaps this was kind of a botched abortion, which had kept her from having kids later on. We can never know whether that's true or not, but still I, you know, still crosses your mind.
Sure. I can't remember where you went to college. So where was this that she got the
Kansas City?
In Kansas City. Kansas City. Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, then you were living in D.C. when you
after I graduated. After I graduated, I moved to D.C. for a while, and that was the time when my future husband like got out of Vietnam and came back, and he went there to see me, mm-hmm. and so that's where I probably conceived, and then when I came back to go, I decided no, I wanted to go to grad school. So when I came back to go to grad school, so I'd only really just taken a summer and a fall off. I was going to start the spring semester. So that's when I found out that I was pregnant.
So when you say came back, you were you back in Iowa at that point, or you went back to Kansas City? So in Iowa.
No, I came back. Came back to Iowa. I was going to go to grad school at the U of I.
At the University of Iowa?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And so the point being, you couldn't get an abortion anywhere in Iowa, and
you couldn't even get yourself to
Kansas City.
Well, I could have maybe. I mean, that's a little shorter drive, even though I didn't have a car. But I didn't even. I no longer knew. I didn't have a contact anymore.
For
the abortion service person. So that was all very hush hush. You know, I mean, this was not, you weren't advertising in the newspaper, that stuff. It was all kind of word of mouth.
And I know from being part of that second wave feminist movement. I mean, I remember, I think at some point, probably you and I went to Roe v. Wade on the anniversary in January of every year. There used to be rallies in celebration and affirmation of mm-hmm. Roe, to protect Roe. I remember my own down jacket had for years had this sticker for supporting abortion rights for women. And I wore that down jacket all the way into the 90s, and it still had this old sticker on it. But and we were probably
well, I think you should, do you still have it? You should pull it out.
No, I think I eventually parted ways with that down jacket. But so we've got just a couple of minutes left, but I'm remembering my own experience of the, of like, so 74, I remember talking to, in my first job, talking with the women I work with, talking about how they had only recently just won the right to wear slacks to work. So uh-huh. when you were in college, did the control over women's bodies extend to a dress code? I mean, I know, like you say, an art institute isn't exactly your most primitive place.
No, indeed. In fact, one of the freshmen things that we were supposed to do was like out to like strip naked and roll in paint and then roll over this like giant canvas, like
oh wow,
to make art. So no, we did not really have a dress code at the Kansas City Art Institute. I don't know, somebody, some girl came in like from Texas, and I don't know, she had like these racks and racks of clothes, which included gowns and stuff. But by the end of 2 weeks, she was wearing Blue Penny's work shirts and blue jeans. And that was pretty much the uniform there.
So there was a uniform. So we've got just under a minute left. Any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Just that I am so deeply saddened that I feel like we're going back and that women are still being controlled. You know, it seems like we're controlled in small and small ways, but this just seems like going backward, and it makes me very, very sad. And, yeah. You know, I'm not sure. Hopefully we can elect some pro-choice people and get this thing reversed.
You're not the only one. Thank you so much for coming on and telling the story. You know, it was a time of deep shame even to be pregnant and unmarried and have to get married. And you're brave and
absolutely.
We appreciate it. And listen, so I'm going to thank you and say goodbye. And I'm going to say to listeners, if you've got a story like this to share from your own experience of pre-Roe days, please send us an email at hmm@mediasanctuary.org.
Now we're taking a break from the woes of the world to appreciate the joys plants can bring, all the more needed now. And if you're up for a road trip and seek plants and plant knowledge, this story's for you.
Hi, this is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And today I'm delighted to be talking with someone about one of my favorite events of the year, Landis Arboretum Plant Book and Bake Sale. Please introduce yourself and tell us about Landis.
Hello, my name is Amy Howanski. I'm on the board of directors at Landis Arboretum. I also work with the plant sale, and I try to get a lot of rare and unusual collectible plants there for sale. Landis Arboretum is a wonderful, wonderful place. We have about 300 plus acres of nature, beautiful, tranquil trails, 15 miles of trails that you can hike on. You can take your dog there, but the dog has to be on a leash. And you can do bird watching. There are a couple of ponds. You can come out and look at the great view from our meeting house, which is up on a hill, and the view looks down the valley. Several landscape painters have wanted to go up onto that deck and paint that view.
And you also have a number of unique areas, the old growth forests?
Right. So we have some collections. We have an old growth area, and that means original trees, trees that are super old that haven't been harvested yet for lumber. We also have a native plant trail that takes about an hour to walk, kind of at a leisurely pace. And all of the plants are labeled. We are known for our oak tree collection. We used to have a really amazing old oak, and it was damage during one of the last hurricanes, but there are other oaks in that same area that are more than 400 years old. We have some small gardens with perennials and bulbs, and we have some collections of lilacs, and that is going to be one of our new renovation projects, is to go through our lilac collection and add some of the new cultivars that are available today in retail markets.
So the plant sale is this weekend, May 14th and 15th. What's in bloom now?
The plant sale is going to be Friday night. That's for members only. And then all day Saturday and all day Sunday. What is in bloom now? Magnolias are just at the end of blooming. Forsythia is just at the end of blooming. You may see some red buds finishing off. You may see some just a little bit left at the end of service berries. And service berries are also called shad bush. And this is because the shad spawn upriver when the service berry blooms. Two things in nature that always happen together at the same time.
So the Arboretum has wonderful trees and shrubs and plants. So it's worth going to just to see them. But then you can also, during the plant sale, take stuff home. Tell us what you have available at the plant sale.
Right. Excellent. So we have a native plant collection, and we call this also Landis Grown. These are things that we are growing ourselves at Landis. We also have the collectible corner, and that's for rare and unusual plants. I like to work in that section. So I scout out, I go to secret places, and I get rare and unusual plants, bring them in, and then we sell them to the public. And these are some really cool things. Maybe they have an interesting sculptural form. Maybe they have beautiful colors. Maybe it's an evergreen that has yellow foliage, you know, instead of green foliage. And then we also have a lot of perennials. Many of these perennials are going to be great for attracting pollinators, bees, butterflies, hummingbirds, dragonflies. So that's often a big draw as well. And this year we have fruit trees. In the past, we've had a lot of requests for peaches and apples, and we do have fruit trees this year.
So it can be an overwhelming selection. It's so vast for perennials and shrubs and trees. One of the things I like about it is that there are people there to answer questions and help us pick out plants. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. And they are called plant experts. Anyone who's a plant expert has experience in the horticulture trade. Maybe they were landscapers, maybe they had their own business, maybe they were master gardeners, and they all have little labels on, plant expert labels. They'll be walking around the different sections of the sale. They can help you pick out, if you say, well, I have an area that's really full sun from sunrise to sunset, and it's sandy soil and it gets kind of dry, and I want a plant that doesn't get any bigger than 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide. Hey, what do you have? Well, the plant expert can kind of steer you toward plants that might be appropriate for you.
And besides plants, there's a book sale and a bake sale. Often people think of a book sale being a table with a few books on it, but that's not the case at Landis, is it?
We have literally thousands of books. There's a big barn on the property. The plant sale is outside on multiple tables surrounding and behind the barn. The barn itself is where you would go to check out. But also, if you go inside the barn, there's a library in there. All of the books are donated by people, and there's every category. There's mysteries. There's a lot of gardening books, but not just gardening books. There's cooking books, all different types of categories. And they are not individually priced. You pay what you think is appropriate and fair for this book.
So you can fill a big bag, fill a box, or just take one or two books. But once you see them, you will fill a bag or a box. There's also a bake sale.
Yes, and the bake sale, those items are made by our members and our volunteers, and they're really good. And you know what we've had in the, you know what I like about this, about the bake sale, and that what we've had in the past, is that there are people who say, well, I realize that nuts may be a problem, so I'm going to make brownies with nuts, and then I'm going to make brownies without nuts. And there are people who make gluten-free products, vegetarian products, vegan products, and we never know what we're going to get, right? They're all donations, but they range from pies and cookies and cupcakes, and really, really tasty items.
Now, getting back to plants, I had originally asked you if you were a master gardener, if you worked with Cornell Cooperative Extension, getting special training to know about plants, and you're not just a master gardener. Tell us more about your connection with Cornell.
Right. I used to be the master gardener coordinator for Cooperative Extension in Albany County. I was also the community gardening coordinator in Schenectady County for Cooperative Extension. I have 40 years in the trade this year. This is my 40th year in the trade. So I've been a business owner. I do landscape design install. I do a lot of diagnostics, helping people find out what's wrong with their plants. I currently work at a local nursery as a horticulturalist. So I have a long time in the trade, and I've worked in many different aspects of the trade. I've done greenhouse production, pruning, and I've also taught horticulture at Avotech. So I've explored so many different avenues, so many different spokes on the wheel, and I've really enjoyed it quite a bit.
So listeners, when Shay says that there are plant experts available at Landis during the plants that'll help you pick things, she means experts. Remind us, the plant sale is, there's two sales a year, actually, the weekend after Mother's Day and the weekend after Labor Day. This month.
So it's actually going to be Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday.
But Friday is only for Landis members.
Right. And we want to encourage everyone to become a member. And so to encourage you, you can show up at the door on Friday, not being a member, and then pay for your membership in order to get in. That's how much we want you as a member. And the really, really cool thing about this is it pays for itself right there, because you get a 10% discount for the whole year on any of the plants you buy at either of the sales. So me being, you know how we are, plantaholics, I make up that money right away. Another really cool feature about the membership is a thing called Reciprocal Gardens. There is a network of botanical gardens and arboretum across the United States that they've all joined together as sister gardens. If you're a member at one, you get some benefits at other gardens. Now, you might not be a full member at the other gardens, but you often get free entrance or free parking or a discount in their gift shop. I have used this to a great advantage in the past, and I think you would enjoy it as well.
And speaking of free parking, there is indeed free parking at the plant sale. There are Boy Scouts on hand to help you cart away all the wonderful buys that you'll find. And there's a great meeting house that is rented out for events at the top of the hill overlooking Schoharie Valley, with a wonderful deck for parties and things, recently renovated. Can you remind us of the address for Landis Arboretum, please?
It is on Lape Road, L-A. P as in Paul, E as in Edward, Lape Road in Esperance, New York. Now, be aware, it is a semi-dirt road, so drive nicely, drive slowly. There are a couple of potholes. Just be careful as you're coming in, but you're going to have a nice, lovely drive through some back wooded areas as you're coming up. There's parking on the left and parking way up at the top of the hill. And then if you need assistance getting from the parking lot to the sale, we also have golf carts that we can drive you around in.
And one final mention, Fred Brakely is the executive director. Some of our listeners may have heard him on another radio station in the Albany area. This is your chance to meet him in person, to talk with him, talk with Amy Hawansky and others about all of your gardening questions. Amy, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. I'll see you there. Thanks a lot, Amy.
Thank you.
That was Bria Barthel speaking with Landis Arboretum for that event that runs on May 13th, 14th, and 15th.
It's time, once again, for our weekly check-in with the community group. We're joined now live by Bob Blackman, president of the Justice Center of Rensselaer County. Welcome, Bob.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be here.
That's really great to have you. Can we start off by acquainting our listeners with the Justice Center of Rensselaer County? What is your purpose? What is your mission?
Well, our mission basically is to be an advocacy group to address injustice, particularly racial injustice, but other forms of injustice as well. We're doing some things in environmental justice, for example. But we are basically an advocacy group addressing various kinds of justice issues.
of which we need as many group such advocacy groups as we can get. Can you tell me the origin story? When, who, how?
Well, my good friend Bob Daugherty, the late Bob Daugherty, who was a Troy City Councilman, he and I used to have breakfast every Friday morning, as often as we could, at least. And we began to talk about some of the issues in Troy, and the Thevenin case had just occurred in 2016. And no one seemed to be speaking out about that. And we decided that, you know, maybe we should form a new group that could address issues like that. And so we met for actually a couple of years, really. And a few other people began to join us for those Friday breakfasts. And in a fairly short time, we had had a board made up of 11 people, and we were incorporated about 2 years ago. And we, about a year ago, became a 501(c), enabling us to take donations and so forth. So that's, in a nutshell, kind of how we started. Unfortunately, Bob died last August, and so we're trying to carry on.
And I, as I understand it, you're carrying on admirably. I know before my time with the Sanctuary for Independent Media that Hudson Mohawk Magazine covered the Edson Thevenin story extensively. Okay. But can you give us a sort of a recap of it? Because this was before my time, and I myself don't know about it.
Yeah, it's we could spend all of our time here talking about that, but Mr. Thevenin, I guess, had been to his brother's birthday party. He was from Waterville, I believe. And he got stopped for driving while intoxicated. And of course, he shouldn't have been driving while intoxicated, but he ran away, left that stop, and was heading home, I guess. And there was a chase by the Troy police, and try to make it as short as I can. He was pushed over by one of the patrol cars, pushed over into a barrier on the Collar City Bridge. And there was this confrontation. He was in his car. He technically was unarmed, but the police considered him to be armed because he was in control of a vehicle. And one of the officers was standing in front of the vehicle. And from the police point of view, they were threatened by his being in the vehicle. And so he was shot. They fired 8 times, I believe. 7 of them hit Mr. Thevenin. And of course, he died there immediately. However, there were witnesses on the street that testified, I believe, that the car didn't actually begin to move until Mr. Thevenin was shot and died. So that was a very controversial thing. And sadly and unfortunately, the officer who actually did the shooting died a couple of years later from COVID. So that's just a strange event that was associated with that.
But let me just interject to ask you, I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that Edson Thevenin was not white.
No, he was not white. He was an African-American.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our position has been, certainly we're opposed to drinking while intoxicated, but we do not believe that any law enforcement people, Troy police or whoever they might be, their duty is not to execute, to judge and execute. And we sort of felt like that's what happened in that case.
And that should not be a controversial position, but in fact, in our society, organizations like the Justice Center and advocates like you are very much required. I know that you've mentioned, and I've read that the Justice Center works on other issues of justice besides policing, but that was sort of your impetus. Mm-hmm. And that your board has met with the leadership of the Troy Police Department If that was recent enough, I wonder what your takeaways are. But I also want to ask you of your assessment of policing today in Troy and Rensselaer County. What tangible signs of progress may you have seen, and what areas of concern still persist?
Again, we could take all of our time and more.
Well, we'll have you back. We want the details. This is vitally important.
Yeah, we did meet fairly recently. We met with the chief. We met with the assistant chief, and also present at the meeting was Captain Conyers, who is an African-American officer, who was the first African-American to be promoted to captain in all of the history of the police department. Anyway, the three of them met with our board of directors, and we had a congenial, very, very productive kind of meeting. And we went away from that meeting feeling pretty good that perhaps with a new police chief, the chances are at least fair that things are going to be different in the future. And there are some signs of that. The police officers are receiving a training from Fred Miller of the Khalil Jameson group. And Fred tells me that that's being well accepted and that they're making progress. And I'm rather impressed with our new police chief. And the mayor has created a new position, the director of equity and inclusion, I believe it is, will be a city employee who will address some of these race-related kinds of issues. So there are some things on the horizon that could make a difference, and we're somewhat optimistic. Actually, we're not going to stop watching, we believe that we are potentially making a difference in all of this.
I think you are. I absolutely think you are. So let me ask you this about your organization. We'll give the listeners a website in a minute. You've got a board of directors, but do you consider yourself a grassroots organization? We've got a minute left. Or if people want ways to join your work, is there a way for people? Is there a role for people?
I hope there will be soon. We are still, you know, we're new enough that we're kind of in our own initial development stages, but we're attempting to determine a way that individual citizens and volunteers can become involved other than on the board of directors, maybe some sort of a membership category, but we're working on that and hope to have something fairly soon about that.
Well, we're going to have you back so that you can have a chance to tell people about it. Are you working on now, or what's next for the center? I understand that you bring speakers from time to time.
Yes, we do have speakers. We're, as I mentioned earlier, we're sort of involved in the in some of the environmental justice issues. We oppose the Dunn landfill. We're gonna testify at a hearing soon about the Dunn landfill. We're somewhat involved in the Norlite controversy over in Cohoes, because our county is upwind, downwind from that, and we're affected by that.
I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have asked you that last question. It was bad time budgeting on my part. My bad. I want to thank you, Bob Blackman, the president of the Justice Center of Rensselaer County. My apologies for cutting you off. We will have your website with the blurb, with the link for this story, and we definitely want to have you back. Thank you
very much. It's a pleasure being with you.
Pleasure's ours.
Thank you.
That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm co-host and engineer Sina Bazila-Hickey.
And I'm Kathy Silber. And our content is produced entirely by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute, you can go to hmm@mediasanctuary.org. And that's it. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.